get on the train. Pimpin' ain't easy.
Hello, and welcome back to Poddin' Ain't Easy here on the Rogue Opinions podcast feed. I am one of your hosts, Scott McLeod, here to talk about Loki season 2, episode 2. And things are really picking up, as it seems, with only 4 episodes to go in the series. Things are really moving along. And joining me, as always, is the OB to my Casey. Yes, Carl. How you doing, Carl?
Yeah, I'm doing really well, just got just been enjoying a nice day off, chilling, playing some video games, and that's about it, really.
Oh, well, it's nice for some people, isn't it?
I'm back at work tomorrow. And I have to work Sunday, so, you know, it's not all sitting on my ass playing video games.
I wish I could believe that, Carl. I really wish I could.
It's true, damn it. It's true.
But I had to try and think of something related to the episode for our usual intros, and I thought we saw the potential debut of a new bromance over bonded over the TVA guidebook between Casey and OB in this episode. So I thought, fuck it, why not? Definitely give Carl OB. He's definitely a few hundred years older than I am.
Cheers. Thanks so much.
Oh, that's what I'm here for. But before
really
we get into
is.
Before we get into episode 2, we've got a couple of things I wanted to mention, Marvel related. There's a couple of things that I've got a couple of minor things that just thought it'd be nice to bring up. One is, apparently, I can't remember how people figure this out, but obviously in Avengers Infinity War, when Thanos does the snap, and then I think the start of Endgame, like it picks up immediately after that. So in the timeline of that, the start of Endgame is still 2018, and then it goes 5 years later. So 5 years later would be 2023, which is the year we're in now. And apparently, according to people on Twitter, today being Tuesday when you're hearing this, tomorrow for us right now, but today being Tuesday as you're hearing, as we're hearing the day it comes out, today in the timeline of the MCU is the day everyone came back from the snap.
Well, there we go. We might see some old friends that went missing 5 years ago. Tomorrow, who knows?
I know. There have been a few people within the Rogue of Paints. I've been wondering for a little while, where the hell did they go? Maybe they'll suddenly appear. So if you hadn't
maybe
seen
Rahul will suddenly appear. Yeah.
Oh, God. I mean, it's close enough to Halloween. That's nightmare fuel enough to think about if Rahul suddenly appearing. Like fucking Candyman.
Don't say his name 5 times.
But, yeah, just the idea of, like, if you've not seen somebody in a while, then all of a sudden it feels like they appeared out of thin air. Now you know why. But then, weirdly enough, it's like a couple of years later, in the timeline of the MCU. So, and actually, the MCU chronology, as we're watching it now, like Secret Invasion time, is actually 2025 for them. So, that's a useful fact if you're into that kind of thing.
Wow, that is. It really is all timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, isn't it? Christ.
I know. I do think it's amazing, like, oh, Avengers Infinity Endgame, it came out 2019. It was like, oh, we've spent 5 years, people feeling all alone. Well, they've lost a lot of people close to them. Maybe they'll never get them back and everything. And we all felt happy that they all got them back at the end. And then a year later, many of us were separated from our loved ones for what felt like 5 years, even though it was maybe a year, year and a half. If only we knew what was going to happen, we'd all be wishing for a Thug and Thanos snap. The next thing I wanted to talk about was something you brought up to me, Carl, and then Reese brought up again in our little rank bank chat. It looks like Marvel's Daredevil Born Again is having to be, had to go undergo a serious rework here, got something about it. It says, Marvel is at the reset on Daredevil Born Again, all directors and writers fired. Marvel Studios fired all creative working on Daredevil after realizing the series is not up to standards. Marvel found the series wasn't working because it was a legal procedural that did not resemble the Netflix version, known for its action and violence. Charlie Cox's Murdoch doesn't even show up in costume until the fourth episode in the original version. Marvel, after greenlighting the concept, found itself needing to rethink the original intention of the show, and a little more than half the series has already been shot.
Yeah, that's mad, that is. But I've heard they've sort of reworking how they're doing the how they're going to be doing their series going forward with more long term visions rather than just like a one shot, one shot series and that. So they're sort of having a really good rethink of how they're doing their sort of. The series, obviously, they weren't happy at all with how Daredevil was proceeding.
Mm-hmm. It's weird, like they said, you know, they've had to, you know, rethink it. Like, you think you'd wait and you decide properly what you want it to be. Do you want it to focus more on legal side? Do you want it to be more like the Netflix version of the show? Because I was like, I think we all can agree that Daredevil was probably the best, like, head and shoulders above the other Netflix shows that they were doing at that time. And you really need to decide what your vision is of this show. Maybe before you shoot half of the fucking series.
Well, yeah, I think that's been the problem that they're trying to address. So at least they know there's a problem and they're trying to address it.
Do you imagine we're talking about like how many episodes does it have? Because I think it's maybe have more than the traditional Marvel series. I just did a quick look there. 18 episodes. So if you shot half the series, that means you've shot 9 episodes worth almost. If you're shooting chronology episodes, if you're shooting it, you know, bits here and there, but almost 9 episodes worth were shot before you stopped this. I mean, you'd think they wouldn't be filming a lot right now anyway with the strikes and everything, but that means before the strikes they shot almost 9 episodes worth of fucking content before having to rework the thing.
Yeah, so this is probably going to push it back a fair bit as well, so we might not be getting this until 2025 or something now if they ever resume filming.
Yeah, because like strikes is going to put a lot of things back as it is, because like, I think the Writers Guild have come to some sort of agreement about basically stuff to do with AI and everything, maybe not being used like to fully replace people, like, but it can only be used for certain purposes, and obviously writers getting a better like share of like royalties and everything, which is also a big thing across like the actor and the Writers Guild. But apparently the SAG actors strike is still going on, as apparently the latest offer that the studios are putting forward was somehow less than what they originally offered, which started the strike in the first place. So clearly the studios aren't getting the fucking message here.
I know. And the longer this goes on, the longer we have to put up with John Cena wrestling again. So get it fucking sorted.
Yeah. I think I was listening to them say the ropes, and they mentioned very similar concerns, and especially after watching that fucking Fastlane match. But also, if you were Cody Rhodes, you'd be rooting for the Actors Guild to get back, because the longer they go on strike, the longer and more likely it looks like that The Rock might steal your spot at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
So you gotta get that sorted. Also, that's gonna push a lot of things back, because this was meant to come out late 2024, and if they have to then have everyone come back to set, then get meet with new writers, new directors, work everything out again. I mean, I get the concerns about also the fact he doesn't show up to the suit to the fourth episode. That's, I get why that's a concern, but I don't really mind the idea of the, you know, legal procedural like thing, especially when you've got 18 episodes worth of. They did kind of dabble in that, at least in the first two seasons of the Netflix show. So I think having that and as a part of it, you know, the both the Matt Murdock and the Daredevil side of things would help again make this a little bit different from the Netflix show and from everything else that Disney Plus is doing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't mind having a bit of courtroom stuff because he's a lawyer, but I wouldn't want it to be too much of a courtroom procedure. There's plenty of those around. And if, you know, as I was done in the first, you know, the first series was building him to getting into the suit, but now he has got the suit. You want to see him, you know, fighting crime and kicking ass in the Daredevil suit. I also feel, hopefully they'll look at shortening it, because like the Netflix series, they were 13 episodes, if I remember correctly, and that felt long enough. I mean, 18 is just too many episodes for something like this. Yeah, I think you don't want any more than 10, personally.
I know, I mean, It depends, like, if it's somewhat similar to the Netflix show, then maybe I want that similar amount of episodes, because I tend to feel like the show was being rushed. Like, I do feel like certain shows do need a few more episodes, I've noticed. So far, I think they seem to be sticking to the 6-episode mark, but that felt like, I mean, Secret Invasion had a lot of issues, but I thought pacing and things being rushed was one of them. And I think with a few more episodes, maybe they would have worked that out a little better. So I'm not against the whole extended run of episodes. And, you know, it's not like we're not used to long waits for Daredevil, because, yeah, while the black suit was also comic book accurate from certain storylines, that was the whole build to the series where I'm wearing the red suit. We got told, oh, by the way, Daredevil's going to be in She-Hulk. Here he is in the trailer. You have to wait to 8 episodes out of a 9-series show to actually see him.
Yeah, well, as I already said, that was what the first series was about, wasn't it? His journey into becoming the actual Daredevil. And also in this new one, apparently Foggy and I forgot the character she played, but Deborah Wall's character. Yeah, they weren't supposed to be coming back either, which for me is a big mistake. So hopefully they'll rectify that as well.
Yeah, so especially given that I believe, obviously, Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin is maybe a part of this, and obviously, you always wonder how this fits into Echo. I think Echo is still coming out. I think Matt Murdock is still supposed to be in that as well as Kingpin. So that's maybe somehow set up this show, but then we don't know what kind of show it's helping set up, because it's basically going back to the drawing board, as it were. And now I'm wondering also, is he going to have something more akin to the Netflix show, or is he going to show up in that weird red and yellow suit they had in She-Hulk?
I'd imagine it'd be the red and yellow suit. I mean, he did have a red and yellow suit in the comics, so, you know, it's not out of the question to go with that, but I don't know, we'll have to see, won't we?
Yeah, so this is the final thing I was going to bring up, because it kind of ties into what we're talking about, because it involves something else to do with Kang and He Remains. Here is something I found this out and I looked into it a bit more, and it really just makes me laugh, and I wanted to share it with you. Marvel Studios was shocked by the negative response to Ant-Man the Wasp Quantumania. Marvel was apparently thought they were putting out a banger when they released Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, and were actually taken aback by the negative critical and audience response.
Oh dear.
Yeah, here it is. There's a quote here from somebody, I can't remember where it's from. It said, "My understanding is, having talked to some people, is that Quantumania really shook them, and I'm sure Secret Invasion shook them further. Quantumania really shook them because they felt they had something good, because they had all internally thought everyone's going to love this. And then they put it out there and people didn't, and they're like, oh, our internal barometer is not attuned to what people want anymore. But Quantumania, they were like, we put out a banger, and then that's not how people felt."
Do they even watch their own stuff before they put it out?
Clearly not. I mean, yeah, there was a story that said that Warner Brothers execs gave Batman v Superman a standing ovation, and we know how that, when they screened that film for them, and we know how that worked out.
Yeah, I think these studios and obviously the people who sort of produce them obviously they're viewing these things with rose-tinted glasses, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. I mean, of course you had to have some faith in it, because obviously it seemed like a lot of what was happening in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, especially with those post-credit scenes, was setting up a lot of stuff to do with Kang. But the issue was with that, as we've already talked about, that outside of the Kang stuff, they failed to properly look at everything else of that film, because pretty much everything else about it, particularly the effects, is what made it so bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a major issue with the Marvel, the MCU, and the last couple of phases, perhaps ever since the end of Phase 3, anyway, isn't it? Thanos stuff. The CGI has been pretty awful, and they've been leaning on it far too heavily.
Yeah, and I think they've been trying to implement AI and everything. I think they've been kind of outsourcing their effects, but kind of there were all sorts of reports of people being pushed to unrealistic deadlines and everything, because know, studio execs, everything with Disney, basically we're pushing to do more and more content, which is why we're getting so many like Disney Plus series in the last couple of phases. So that's really stretched their storytelling and basically how everything needs to fit in and try to figure where does everything bloody fit in. And like I've seen people who have more expertise in the whole effects thing talking about how studios like this rush people to do these, get these stuff done. It goes, so if you see something that looks like it was done in a week, it's probably because it was.
Yeah, well, you know, brushing these things out, they're just shooting themselves in the foot because they're putting out below par content. And, you know, word of mouth spreads, and, you know, the first bunch of people who are going to see it hate it, then, you know, less people are going to spend their hard earned, especially now with the cost of living and everything. Mm-hmm. You're just going to think, well, actually, I'll perhaps wait until it's available to rent on streaming or something rather than pay a fortune to go to the cinema to watch a film that everyone says sucks. So, you know, yeah. I think a lot of film companies, not just Disney and Marvel, needs to sort of start up in their games again, really, if they want to get people pulled back in the cinemas.
I mean, you look at the TV shows, I mean, it varies depending on what people's opinions are for the different like TV shows. Like, they loved WandaVision and they like Loki initially, but, you know, you got also shows like Secret Invasion that get, you know, the negative response. But I think the property-wise, there's quite a few of the films, the only ones that really have gotten, you know, positive reception, even though they were good films, were the ones that people seemed to already have a lot of faith in before, like the Spider-Man movies with Tom Holland had already proven to be good, plus the nostalgia. So No Way Home gets all this positive reception. People loved Black Panther, so even though it ran a bit long, Wakanda Forever got a lot of positive response. Guardians 3 was a very emotional end to the story that James Gunn had been building, positive response. The one, I think the last properly new thing that people were exposed to cinematically that they really got on board with was Shang-Chi. Yeah, that's the last new, properly new character they've introduced cinematically. I think people were all on board because Eternals, the less said about that, the better. Doctor Strange, the sequel to that, didn't perform very well. Quantumania, as we said. And, you know, Secret Invasion did not work well. But I think a lot of people, myself included, loved, and you as well, loved Loki Season 1, which I think has given us a lot more faith in Loki Season 2.
So far, it's been really good, the first two episodes, which we're about to delve into episode 2 any time now. So,
yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed this discussion about Marvel because they really do need to get there. And Disney themselves is a big proponent of, like, the people who are fighting against this whole strike and everything, but I know a lot of people who have actually lost a bit of faith in Marvel recently. And I think sitting through like Secret Invasion and Quantumania is not going to help that faith.
It's not just Marvel though. If you watch the live action Little Mermaid thing, it's some of the CGI on that is horrendous, to be honest. And you got some of the actors phoning in their performances as well. So this is another thing that's getting a bit out of hand, all these live-action remakes, because they're on about doing another one, which is all animals, so it's all going to be CGI. So what's the point? I mean, that's why I just stick to the cartoons. I mean, right, if you can get proper human characters involved, then all right, fair enough, I can see a bit of point in it. But if it's something you've got to completely CGI because it's based on talking animals, you might as well just leave it as, you're never going to recapture the magic of the animation. It's just a stupid, pointless money exercise. But, you know, you can hear about more of my thoughts and Sam Carmichael's thoughts on a pod we did about this a few months ago, if you want to go looking in the back catalogue.
What a pro, ladies and gentlemen, what a pro. But I agree with what you're saying, because like, that's why, you know, even though Jon Favreau directed both films, there's a reason that Jungle Book worked and Lion King didn't in terms of live action adaptations, because even though they're both great stories that are being adapted and Jon Favreau's directing them, a crucial part of Jungle Book is the human character of Mowgli, so he got him interacting with the CGI characters, and whereas Lion King was all animals, as you say, so that's why, a big reason why I think it didn't work. And you know, there's a big thing about the Actors Guild. There's a lot of people who are extras complaining about people, studios wanting AIs to replace them. There was a clip that came out from some weird Disney like cheerleader film, and a clip where it cuts to the crowd, and several of the crowd are being used, are being dubbed, added in by CGI, which somebody clearly rushed via AI or whatever. And so it's clearly obvious these people are not real. And people were sharing it around like, this is what these studios are trying to fight for when the whole pushing of AI and everything.
Yeah, I saw that. And what I can compare it to, if you've ever played like the old FIFA games back in the day, the people, the animated crowd in those, that's pretty much what it looks like. And fellow FIFA players will know how horrendous some of those used to look.
Yeah. Or like when you play the wrestling, even to fucking more recent ones, like we get to the weird, almost cardboard cutout looking crowds that you see in those games. It just looked absolutely horrendous.
But it's a problem as well, isn't it? Like you say, games, they're rushing games out. I mean, how often do they need first day patches to sort out glitches and stuff? Because these games have been rushed out to meet deadlines, because it's all just, obviously it's all about the money, but you're just, you know, hurting your own reputation and probably costing yourselves money at the end of the day by rushing these things out that aren't ready or done to the expected standard.
Yeah. I've enjoyed this little conversation, but I think let's try and move on to something a little more positive. And by that, I mean Loki episode 2 of season 2, titled Breaking Bad. And I was happy when I tuned into this one, because the first episode was about 48 minutes long, including credits around 40 or so minutes. And then we got a 52-minute episode here, so even though we've only got 6 episodes, like that they're leading toward closer to the hour mark with the runtime here, get, you know, everything in that you need to, and don't feel like you're rushing along with everything.
I mean, yeah, as you said to me before, though, you say it's like 15 minutes long. There's about 20 minutes of end credits, isn't
there? I know. End credits, which I sat through, because episode 1 gave me false hope that there would be...
Yeah, I did the same. Well. Yeah, I did the same.
Yeah, you suckered us in, Marvel, you absolute bastards. I mean, and even then, I said, don't rush it. People felt like there should have been a scene where they explain how Loki and that hair like picked up X-Files 10. But I'm like, no, have them there in their suits. They're walking and talking, keeping you up to date what's happening. Because, you know, don't underestimate the good old walk and talk to give you exposition.
You don't need every little thing explained. Mm-hmm. Bloody hell.
So it's Loki and Mobius opening the episode up. It comes up 1977 London. Underneath it says Sacred Timeline, which is important to not know, because when Sylvie appeared somewhere in the middle, because when Sylvie appeared outside that McDonald's, it came up Branch Timeline. So there are several branch timelines out there, especially after the events of this episode. So when they're hopping around, it'll tell you this is part of the Sacred Timeline and this is a different branched timeline. But they're there because X5 is seemingly...
Sorry, what date did you say?
I think it said 1977.
I thought it was more like 90. I'm sure it's more like 1927, you know.
No, I'm sure it was the 70s.
Could be wrong, but I thought it looked a bit... I thought it was longer ago than that. But we'll go with you, because my memory's not always the best, to be perfectly honest.
Ah, see, I've even looked it up here. In London, 1977, on the Sacred Timeline.
No, fair enough, then. My mistake.
Anyway. So they're hunting Hunter X5 because he seemingly abandoned his post when looking for Sylvie and decided to go find his old life on the Sacred Timeline, which is as an actor named Brad Wool, and they follow him because he got hit off his tempad, so they're thinking about, you know, where Sylvie is, and he's outside some film premiere for this weird horror movie that he's in. And a little bit Mobius sneaks in amongst the press to ask him a question as he's trying to walk away. And they basically try and trap him in. And he's like, oh yeah, I'll talk. Let me go grab you guys a drink. And he's walking away. Like, Loki's back to him and goes, is he running? Yeah, he's running.
yeah, it's a good little scene seeing that. X5 is it's been a naughty boy, really, hasn't he?
Yeah, because like they do the previous one at the start, and he the bit where he says this changes everything, and you know the judges say like no, this changes nothing, but seemingly obviously being told that he had a life somewhere in the timeline made him kind of realize that maybe he wanted to go and live that life rather than trying to basically live by the rules of some people he doesn't even know, because he probably thought he was working for the Tigers, now he doesn't even know what it was all for. Yeah, but I do really love this like extended kind of chase scene with him trying to get away, because also he knows how to kind of flee, but also he's dealing with Loki and everything. And so he tries to run away, you get Hunter B-15 pretending to be a fan and then turn around and trying to take him down, but he manages to escape there. Loki kicks him down a flight of fucking stairs at one point, but whenever he manages to use a little device and teleport himself away, and then it looks like he's going to be accosted by a gang of street youths, but it turns out it's all an illusion created by Loki. And I do love at one point X5 just goes, "Ah, quit the magic and fight fair."
Yeah, it's good that we see Loki using his powers, because we haven't seen this for a little bit, and you know it's good to be reminded that he is actually a very powerful being. Perhaps, I don't know. I mean, he calls himself a god. I'm not quite sure he's really god level personally, but it is good to see him using his powers. And yeah, he gets his like multiple. He makes multiple versions of himself. And these shadows grab him, and Mobius comments, "What, you think that's a bit over the top?" And he goes, "I thought it was spot on."
I do love, like, he's got three versions of him. He's using these little shadows, like this fucking, like, given that Brad's kind of promoting some horror film, that's kind of like a scene out of a horror film, because Yoki uses this shadow with, like, the horns appearing and just grabbing them. And then Mobius talks to the center, Loki. They say, yeah. "Oh, that bit." Oh, yeah. He revealed he was the one up to the right. It's all illusion. It goes back to what Loki was saying when he was comparing his illusion like abilities to the kind of things that Sylvie can do. He's pointing out what makes them both different in terms of their abilities. But they managed to take X5 back to the TVA, and they're getting ready to interrogate him. And they're trying to figure out how he's temp power, how they initially was able to like to hide himself. So they take it to OB, who's sitting in amongst his workshop making some sort of device, because he's trying to still like make sure the temporal loom is still doesn't go out of control, the branches and everything going out of control. And I do love the kind of earnest way he says when they try and get him to fix it. He goes, "Do you guys think this is more important than stopping the temporal loom?"
Yeah, and they sort of try and sort of convince him it is, and he's like too busy, so he goes, "Oh, it's all in the handbook. I wrote it myself."
I do love that, and there's a point later on where Casey mentions that people are doing a lot of things manually because Miss Minutes is basically offline and they can't get Miss Minutes back. So basically, and then you got Buddy Mobius in that. Basically looking through the guide book trying to figure out the temp pad, which shows that the TVA pretty much relied on tech and on missed minutes, and now they basically have to do everything themselves.
Yeah, it's not great when you've got to suddenly do everything yourself from a manual you can barely understand, but luckily for them, what was his name again? I always get his name wrong.
Casey.
Casey has read it and it understands it, and he knows that the temp pad isn't doing what X5 said it was. So he says that it's not doing that. So they go back to try and interrogate him again.
Don't make Casey though. I do love that he's talking to B-15 about Rensley, and he's whispering about it like, "Why are you whispering? Like, isn't this the secret? Us trying to, you know, catch Rensley?" Like, "No, she killed an hunter. She escaped the TVA. She knew it, but it was all a lie. Really, if anything, her catching Rensley is a priority everybody should know about." Like, "Oh, okay." And I like the idea that he's one of the only people that's read the the guy, because he's probably the only person that had time, given he's pretty much sitting at his desk all day, so he's had time to read it. And, you know, given it's Christmas coming up, I do like the kind of scene of Loki trying to figure it out, and Loki's like, no, you need to do this, and that's what he's reading out to him. It reminds like any time you've ever gotten a new present or whatever, anything that comes with some sort of instructions or a manual, you've got two family members trying to put it together and think like, no, you're doing this, you're there, you need to do this. It always leads to an argument.
Yeah, it really does. Or if you're like me, you don't even bother reading the instructions and fuck it all up completely.
Or you just eventually tell your dad, fuck it, throw the instructions away, because apparently he knows better than the people who made the thing. Anyway. But yeah, then they go back to X-Fi to try and interrogate him, but, you know, both try to do, like, Loki's trying to be a bad cop and, you know, Mobius a good cop, and love that Mobius is basically telling Loki not to let him get to him, because he thinks that Loki out of the two of them will be the one who has the outburst. And it feels like X-Fi being, you probably haven't seen other people get brought in, other variants brought in this situation, he basically knows the best ways to not tell them what they want to hear, basically try and get under their skin.
Yeah, he's probably interrogated people himself, so he knows all the tricks in the book, and he's quite calm there and virtually pretty much turning everything around onto them. So yeah, he's a tough nut to crack, as they say.
Yeah, like, you know, Loki's trying to implore him and saying, there are lives at stake here, and he just turns it right back around and goes, yeah, there are lives at stake in New York as well when you led all those villains. Which, weirdly enough, again, it's still not too long ago from Loki, because Loki mentions it later on, like, remember I was so mad at my dad and Thor, I took an army down to Earth and held all of New York hostage. Because in that Loki's timeline, it's like, my plans to take over New York have been foiled. I've been captured. Oh, look, and now I've disappeared with the Tesseract. He's captured by the TVA. Everything in Loki season one happens, and now this is happening. So he's just been through a lot in a short space of time.
Yeah, he has. And the page just says, was that planned? No, it was acted out.
And then, Mobius tries again, just kind of like, I got one for you. I got a knock knock joke. Knock knock. Who's there? Brad. Brad who? That's show business. Yeah, he's trying to get under Loki's skin, trying to mention his mother. He mentioned Sylvie, trying to say, you mess up everything and you hurt everyone around you. And Loki just kind of lets them go. Whereas Brad does similar things to Mobius, talking about his life in the secret timeline. And Mobius is the one who ends up slapping him, like, because he calls him a nowhere man. Like, I'm not a nowhere man, you're a nowhere man. And then Loki has to get him out of the room. Like, what was that? He clearly got under your skin. No, he got under your skin.
But it's all right, because they're calming down with some key lime pie, so everything's all right.
Yeah, they go for what I call the Men in Black approach. When everything gets a bit stressful, they go and have pie. Which is a really distracting shade of green. Like, that's that pie is processed within an inch of its life.
Oh, it really is.
But we just kind of talk about it, and then so Loki mentions that bit, like, remember when I tried to take over New York with an army because I was angry at my dad, and then I tried to use the Mind Stone on Tony Stark, and then it wouldn't work, so I threw him off a building, because you remember there was that scene, he tried to tap at his chest, but also Tony Stark has the arc thing, and he's just like, this usually works. But don't worry, performance issues aren't uncommon. I do love he talks about that, and a lot of people have been picking up on this little detail, because obviously there was a theory for a long time that Loki had the Mind Stone in his staff, but it wasn't confirmed until Age of Ultron. But they're confirming this little detail that Loki in 2012 knew that he had an Infinity Stone in his staff the whole time.
Yeah, makes sense that he would do, to be honest.
Yeah, because we also learned the Tesseract itself is an Infinity Stone, so he's going after one Infinity Stone. Hell, they even have, even though Hela reveals its fate, they have a version of the Infinity Gauntlet in Odin's, like, treasure room. So, obviously, why wouldn't Loki know what the fucking Infinity Stones are?
Yeah, exactly. He's someone who's going to know that sort of stuff. But they do come up with an idea to interrogate X5, a little plan. They bring in some device, and Loki pretends to lock Mobius outside of the room, and he starts prattling around with this device, like, acting like he doesn't know how to use it. And it sort of traps. It sort of traps in my X5 in like this like orange cube, which you can make smaller, and you can make it small enough to sort of completely compress him. So he's making it smaller and smaller until X5's scared enough to answer the questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like he tries to promise, he doesn't know. He said, "Oh, I found her, but she got away. Like, I don't believe you." Brad, I want to believe you, but you're just such a good actor, you know?
Yeah.
And they try and genuinely make it seem like Loki has went against the plan, because obviously Banger like, no, Loki, this is not you, you're not really a bad guy, don't listen to him. Because I think that goes back to earlier on where when Mobius tried to appeal to Brad, and Brad even says to Mobius, well, you could be a really good actor, Mobius, and then Mobius was showing off his acting ability thereby, because obviously, as we know, it was all part of their plan.
Mm.
Because Brad was like, oh, you don't know how to use that, because it takes Loki a while to get it started, and then he keeps pressing buttons like, oh, well, sorry Brad, I didn't mean to do that, but as you said, I don't know how to do this, anything could happen if I press this button.
Yeah, we could just start off with, well, what does this button do?
And eventually he agrees to tell him what he knows, and they let him out. He realizes that Mobius was in on it, and they get him to take them to that branch timeline where there was that McDonald's that Sylvie was working at. You see her working behind the counter in her little like uniform. And
living again, her best life.
Yeah, definitely. I've heard people say that working at McDonald's is actually better than you might realise. So there you go. I once applied for McDonald's. I got turned down. I was actually a bit of an ego. Really hit to the ego, that one.
I can imagine, yeah.
I'm not better at all, but I joked about how it's a bit of advertising that when they were listing all the items at the end of the last episode, Mobius twice, to use a wrestling term, puts over how great McDonald's is in this episode. Really getting the most of out of that little deal there, where I assume that Marvel and McDonald's seem to make, that's capitalism for you folks.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, they've definitely pumped some money into getting mentioned, haven't they?
Yeah, they definitely have. Because Mobius is like, well, we're not going anywhere just yet, because Brad is all freaking out. He wants to immediately go back to his tailor, because he said he would, but he wants to, her agency in which he wants to go back, that Meryl makes him suspicious, be like, no, Brad, you're going to treat us to lunch. And then there's a bit where they're watching Loki and Sylvie talking, and Mobius is sitting there just scoffing at a McDonald's apple pie.
Yeah, I like the bit of like Loki approaches Sylvie at the counter, and there's like this long awkward silence, and she just is like, well, are you going to order anything? He's like, we need to talk, and so it's like, well, my break's in 5 minutes. It's always like a cliche in these programs, isn't it? Like they're always, if someone wants to talk to somebody that's working at anywhere, their break is always in 5 minutes. I mean, the timing's impeccable. How about a show where my break isn't for another hour yet, so we have to sit there in real time for an hour watching this person work until that break comes along?
I mean, ironically, I think in Breaking Bad there was a bit where Walter goes to talk to Gus and he's left waiting for ages, waiting for him, so we kind of got that before. But I mean, and then they kind of show that she's kind of a decent employee, because the guy comes up to her who was behind the counter in the last episode, basically asking her to do something. She said, oh, I've already done it. So she went out to him and basically said, like, listen, I'm taking my break now. It's not for another hour. Well, I'm taking it now. They probably couldn't argue with her.
That's probably true. Yeah. She's puts her foot down. I get the impression he kind of fancies her a little bit as well, that employee.
Yeah, probably. But basically they try and talk, but she's like, she has a lot of time. I think she even comes out with a McDonald's drink or whatever.
Yes, she does, yeah.
Which is good. You know, perks of the job and all that. But she comes out and Loki's really the last person she wants to see after the whole thing of him trying to stop her killing He Who Remains, and he's trying to warn her everything and talk about the TV, but she doesn't want to hear about it. It's like the TV is the problem there. Everyone there's variants. And then so it's like she can't believe that he's still like standing up for them, because obviously for her whole life the TV has been the enemy. She's the one on the run. And Loki's like, well, are you happy like here working at this place? And she's like, yeah, I am, because she's not running. She chooses to be here.
Yeah. While this is going on back in the TVA, we get 1-2-B-5 and OB and the other guy, Casey. That's it. I was going to say, I keep wanting to say Clarence. I'm going to get Clarence out of my head. I need help.
You need to write it down somewhere, the way that Mobius wrote down the word skin in the dust of that computer in the last episode.
I bloody do. And anyway, he's got his thing ready to retrofit onto the temporal loom, but unfortunately, he can't open the. He finds out the doors are locked, and he can't open it unless He Who Remains or Miss Minutes is available to help them. So that's not ideal, so that they're pretty much fucked on that account. Oh, there was a bit, I can't remember what it was, but there is a bit where they pretty much confirm that Renslayer knew about He Who Remains all along, don't they? They're having a discussion. Yeah. I think B5 says something, and then Loki says, well, back in the past I came across a recording and it did sound like they were partners.
Yeah, I love how he waits to that moment to tell them that, but yeah, that's about where Casey is telling them about, no, that's not why the temp pad is, and they mention that Miss Minutes and Renslayer kind of knew what was going on. And I think it's in reference to Renslayer, you've got B15 going mentally, she is full of surprises, isn't she?
Yeah.
It was just like a small scene with OB earlier on where he realizes he can't open the doors, and so when Casey and B15 come to see him, he's running up and down up the stairs like, we're all gonna die. Which isn't helpful, even after what happens to all the branches that you can print at the end of the episode. Clearly something's gonna go wrong with the temporal law, because I'm assuming something's gonna happen at least to that future version of the TVA that we see Loki in when he got time split, the doors were closed, and then he saw Sylvie before he got pruned. I believe that's gonna something in this season is gonna lead to that future that Loki saw. So and the doors were closed in that as well, so I have no idea what's gonna happen there.
Yeah, quite possibly. That does look like something we're going to get to by the looks of it. Also, when we go back to Mobius and Loki, they're joined by X5, and they're talking, and X5 is looking around a lot and getting quite edgy and trying to convince everyone that we need to get going. But he's not specifying why he's in such a need to get away.
Mm-hmm. I do love that, like a bit in the back and forth, him and Mobius went in the restaurant. Mobius is trying to talk to him about acting and everything. He was like, come on, the film that he was promoting, like, what's it about? Come on, tell me. He's trying like have a conversation, but then they eventually they get him to reveal that basically it wasn't a case that he abandoned his place. Like he came here and like the judges set up all these like hunters basically with all the charges that they saw them taken away, because they were setting up a post so they could go between all these different timelines and basically just start printing timelines again so they could go back to just one sacred timeline. And they when they find out where they are, they realise they've already started, so they get there a little late when they try and take everybody out, but they've already went to. But they kind of panic and they basically send everybody to a bunch of different places, and they end up losing quite a few timelines in the process.
Yeah, quite a lot. General Dux is as they're trying to fight everybody off and stop their plans. She just makes the call to, we will just have to blow up what we've go with what we've got. So they set it off, and yeah, it's quite a lot of timelines that they do prune.
Because like you see, like all the different lines that like in the last episode, at the end of the last season. How many are, and then you see how few are left when it cuts back to the TV later on. Everyone's kind of all shaking, like B-15, and says, like, that's the countless lives all lost across those timelines. And, you know, people dying across all those different timelines. Because, like, Loki and I do work together. Loki and Sylvie do work together. They'll take them down. And you can't remember Kate's name, Doc's name. I can never remember her name off the top of my head. So we both got characters in this show we can't fucking remember.
Oh, at least I was there for you on that one. Look, we've got each other's back, like Sylvie and Loki. But yeah, when they do sort of save the day, Sylvie wants to go back to 1982. Clearly, she's really enjoying life at McDonald's. And Loki's trying to talk her out and saying, look, you know, I saw you in the future. You have to be there. And Sylvie's like, well, no, that was the point of what we were doing. You know, killing he who remains. The future isn't written. Anything can happen now. But I think we all know that that's not the last we're going to see of Sylvie.
Yeah, definitely. Something to do with that future is gonna happen. And you know, basically, she's like saying, "Like, see, so you think the TVA is the solution? Look, like everything that's happened, the TVA is clearly the problem. The TVA is broken. Like, the TVA is the reason we've lost all these like timelines." And Chica goes back. She just had that little moment towards the end with that guy behind the counter, saying, like, "Was your mum picking you up?" So, yeah, are you going to be in tomorrow? Yeah, and like I get you, means maybe he does fancy her, but we do end the episode by hearing that they've got a hit off of Renslayer's tempad, so they've got a location as to where they're going to find Renslayer, which I believe is going to lead us into that scene at the World's Fair when they see Victor Timeline, which was shown in the Quantumania post-credit scene. So finally getting some movement on her and Kang / He Remains, or whatever the variant that we're going to be looking at in this series, is good, because I think that hopefully means, like, if they popped up right at the start of this episode in 1977 London, all that means they'll pop up in whatever disguises they wear right at the start of where they need to go to find her and Kang, and we'll start that off and get some of her in this series.
Yeah, that's how that'll be quite cool, and then we'll see where things go with Kang and Renslayer, which will be interesting to see.
Yeah, because I was like, whatever your opinions of the whole Jonathan Majors situation, whether or not he's fully been acquitted or whether or not there's still some, the jury's still out, literally and figuratively there, on that situation, that character is clearly a very important part of this series. A lot of this was shot before then, so the more we can get of that and actually start progressing this series and make it seem like the stuff actually matters, the better, because like I said, I know a lot of people, like I said, who have lost faith in Marvel, and a lot of that is in the reliance on the multiverse aspect of it. But I would argue that the thing with Loki and everything is that the reason this is better than most stuff that we've seen so far is that this is the only one out of all of them where it feels like the multiverse actually matters in the grand scheme of things. And what I mean by that is, like, it was a decent idea what they were doing with the multiverse in Doctor Strange, but I don't think they fully went all the way with it, and that's why that film fell flat. You had the multiverse is mostly used for nostalgia purposes, if anything, with Spider-Man No Way Home. Even though it was fun, it was still very much nostalgia. Whereas with Loki, and like, it was barely even multiverse, it was more to do with the Quantum Realm and bloody Quantumania. The only thing with the multiverse you got was right at the very end in the bloody post-credit scenes. So a lot of it was to do with the bloody Quantum Realm, which they really didn't need to go fucking back to, because they'd already done it in the last two films and they didn't need to do any more of it, because it just led to more horrible fucking CGI. So this feels like, What If doesn't really feel like it's canon, so that's just a bit of animated fun. Whereas, so of everything, this feels like the only thing to do with the multiverse and the bloody multiverse saga that actually feels like it adds anything to what will come later on in the Kang Dynasty, which is the plans for the next Avengers film.
Yeah, it does seem like it's been a bit forced into a lot of the other films that they're trying to do, like you say, especially I think with Doctor Strange. I mean, they went to all these different multiverses for like 2.4 seconds.
Yeah.
And then that was really about it.
You had the Illuminati there who's just served to get murdered by Wanda, and also say, oh look, Patrick Stewart's back. Oh look, see, you finally got John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic. Now shut up about it.
But yeah, it's I know they're trying to do stuff with Kang and the multiverse, but it doesn't mean you have to sort of shoehorn it into every film in the upcoming phases if you don't really need to.
Yeah.
And I mean, what's going to happen? I mean, we haven't heard that. Was it America was the name that could go through all these?
America Chavez.
I mean, what was the point of their character if we're not going to see her again? I thought there might be some to that, because she could navigate herself through all these different multiverses. You think she'd pop up again somewhere, wouldn't you? Yeah. But seems to be like a one-off character. So I don't know. They seem to have planned the first three phases quite intricately, and it's almost like they're winging it.
Yeah, I mean, and again, also they didn't have to account for TV shows. They could just go like, okay, we're doing X amount of movies a year. This will go for this film, that film, that film. And here we go. This is how much this one kicked. This one only kicked a little bit. Here's Guardians. That's its own thing. Whereas they had to account for the TV shows as well.
Yeah, we're launching our own streaming service, so we're gonna need content. So you're gonna have to make stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. And if anything, if you want to really focus on anything with Kang and the multiverse, really, if the film doesn't involve Kang in it or an event of his, don't fucking do the multiverse then. Because if you're not going to bump into an event of his, then the stuff where he does pop up, it's going to be even more sick of it by the time we get to the end of the saga. Because like, I think he was meant to, with rumours that a event of his, I don't know if it's still going to happen, was meant to be a villain in Moon Knight, or there's maybe a version of him potentially in Fantastic Four, because part of his origins in the comics ties into Fantastic Four. And those stuff would be good, whereas I don't know why Kang had to be in Quantumania, even though, to be fair, he was one of the best parts of it. Why did that character need to interact with Ant-Man? It felt like a random choice for his first proper cinematic appearance.
Yeah, they could have just had Mordok as a villain if they'd have done him properly. Obviously, the version they introduced in that film wouldn't have been good enough to be an overarch the main villain, but proper Mordok would have been. So they could have gone with that, because, yeah, he just dies at the end, that variant of Kang, so it doesn't even lead anywhere, really, apart from the end of credits scene. So it all felt very forced, didn't it, really?
Well, this feels more like our, basically, here's our problems and our issues with Marvel as a whole, and also here's a little bit of Loki.
But there was an enjoyable episode. What? How would you rate this episode? Episode 2, Scott.
Well, I enjoyed like episode 1 for it was. There was a lot of setup in that one, whereas this one was a lot more stuff was happening. Can't remember what I gave. Maybe we're in the 7.5 was the last episode. So I'd give this one an 8.5.
Yeah, I'd say 8 or 8.5, somewhere around that ballpark. I really enjoyed it. So I still think there's better episodes to come. At least I hope there are. So But so far, it's been a lot stronger than Secret Invasion. Although the first couple of episodes of that weren't too bad, and then it just seemed to go downhill.
Yeah. I mean, it's 8.5 out of 10, just on its own merits. No Olivia Colman in it, instant 0 out of 10 for anything that she's not involved in. Even so, she's not even cast in. If it doesn't involve Olivia Colman in it, 0 out of 10.
Exactly. She was the absolute star. Just make a program of Olivia Colman's character.
Yeah. Make her the new Nick Fury, just have her keep popping up in Avengers films. So that's what you do.
Yep. I mean, Nick Fury's selling bread now, so you know.
Yeah, talking about cinematic things to do with Nick Fury, I'm pretty sure the Marvels is now becoming here very soon. And I'll be honest with you, the other day I saw like all new posters, whatever, for the Marvels released. I briefly forgot Marvels would even happen.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if that doesn't flop, to be honest. And then they'll just say we're all sexist and don't want to watch films about superhero women. No, it's not that. We just want to see good quality films with characters that are well known.
I mean, Kamala Khan's going to be in it, so we know it'll have at least 50% more personality than the last Captain Marvel film did.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah. This episode really can be summed up in that one clip from Seinfeld with George's dad. Like, I got a lot of problems with you people, and you're going to hear about it. That is us towards Marvel in this episode. But, girl, when you're not, you know, other than, you know, those great episodes like the one we did with Sam, where you talked about your issues with live-action remakes of Disney films, have you got anything else, Nick, currently that you're working on here at Rogue Opinions?
Not really, not outside the latest Rank Bank that we did with Reese, where we ranked our favourite boys' characters. They got me upset briefly because I thought they were going to put Deep in the shit category, but that didn't happen, thankfully. And also the football pod with Nathan and Liam, which will probably be back next week with the Premier League coming back because, you know, no one cares about the international break.
Oh, there you go.
But Scotland have qualified, Scott. Yeah. I mean, as an avid football fan, you must be over the moon.
I mean, as somebody who doesn't give two shits about football, that surprised even me. Because I heard about it and I'm like, really, is this a thing that's happened? And I had to get people who know about it. Yes, to confirm, yes, Scotland have actually qualified for an international tournament. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's the last time we qualified for an international tournament was the 1998 World Cup, which I was barely old enough to process that ever happening.
No, but, you have qualified for stuff more recently, I think, but you do normally draw against us. We do seem to have to play each other when we both qualify for these events.
Really, but anyway, I might be thinking
of Wales, actually, so you might be right. I get confused.
I don't think we've probably qualified. We've been in group stage. Like, we were in the groups for against England like last year, in the last Euros, and there was a whole thing of Scotland being congratulated, and people treating it as a win when we went 0-0 because everyone thought England was going to squash us. Oh, England will get 5 goals, England will get 6 goals, and nobody scored anything. I'm like, really, if anything, yeah, support your country and everything. I watched that game. It was one of the few games I actually watched. And that tournament, but like I remember watching something like, I don't care about football at the end of times. Like, I'm not celebrating a goal that had 0 goals. I mean, I feel like somebody who doesn't like the Bret Hart show, Michael's Iron Man match, like, there were no falls, it was boring.
Yeah,
I watched, weirdly enough, I watched 3 games in that whole Euros, like in the last Euros. 2 of them involved Scotland, the one where we drew and the one where we officially got put out. And then I
you're
watched
bad luck, Scott. You're bad luck.
Then we also watched the finals, and may have had a little bit of a cheer with Italy beating England. My mum was supporting Italy not because she doesn't like England, but because she works for an Italian. So that's why that was at least her reasoning for supporting Italy.
That's fair enough.
There you go. It's more, not last year's was the most football I've watched in God knows how long. But yeah, I'm surprised by that, and I can't wait for us to properly embarrass ourselves. But I won't care any other way.
You've got big Scott McTominay. You'll be fine.
Anyway. And I look forward to it when it doesn't come home again.
That clicking you can hear is Scott trying to fuck up who now Scott McTominay is.
I have no idea what you're talking about. This would be a great moment for me to properly just start reading from his Wikipedia pages if I'm not reciting it from memory, but I legit cannot be arsed. But as Carl said, you've got football pods on. I expect at least the next 20 minutes of the next football pod to talk about Scotland's chances in the next Euros, and not be 20 minutes of Nathan slagging off Scotland, as he's prone to do.
I think we can sum up Scotland's chances in about 2 minutes at all. In all honesty. not that we're all going to think they'll go out and not do very well, but you know.
Yeah, like I said, it doesn't make a difference to me. But yeah, as Carl said, football stuff going on, and Rogue Opinions, Bank is officially back. We're kind of building up a little bit of backlog. Some different ideas coming out. We have an episode about the boys' characters. We've got some Star Wars related ones we want to do. We're even thinking of branching into Game of Thrones for an upcoming one, so stay tuned for all of that. Scott and Paul's Rambling Podcast at SP Rambling on Twitter, available on this Rogue Opinions feed and on its own feed, wherever you get your podcast, Android, all Android podcasts and sites, Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Podbean. Here's a light rating. Give Rogue Opinions and Scott and Paul's Rambling Podcast a light rating or review on your chosen platform. You can find on Scott and Paul's Rambling Podcast, we've got a lot of a catch-up episode we did when I came from Gordon, not a few weeks after I came back from London. Me and Paul got drunk. I talked about some of my issues with London, how much I enjoyed all in. Paul talked a lot about his new bathroom that he had done. And then we talked a bit about slagging Vince McMahon. We got some wrestling stuff coming on Scott and Paul's soon as well. New episode of Rogue Retro Smackdown is coming out soon with me and Paul. We talked about an episode that we really did not enjoy that much. Outside of here, I'll just throw it out there. I hosted an episode on ESSR, our feature show, paying tribute to the life of Bray Wyatt. It came out Friday last week. So Friday the 13th, we thought that was a good day to release that.
Yeah, good thinking.
So good check that if you feel so inclined, if you might hear and reminisce on the memories of Bray Wyatt. But it's me, I've been a little bit busier this week. I've been trying to balance that and my work schedule. And scheduling is not one of my strong suits, Carl. It is much like Scotland trying to qualify and do well in an international tournament. It's not easy.
It really isn't.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Second hand unwind. If you're lost,